All right, we're beginning here on the top of Membet Amud Aleph, seven lines down. Tanu Rabbanan, tzitzit, ain't tzitzit, ela anaf. The meaning of tzitzit means anaf, something that is hanging, free-flowing or free-hanging, v'cheinu omer. And similarly, it says with regards to the pasuk in Yechezkel, v'kecheini b'tzitzit roshi. They grabbed me or took me by the, either you can call it the tufts or the bangs of my hair. V'amar Abaye, tzrich lifroda kitzitzita darmai. I need to divide it or separate it like the bangs or tufts of the non-Jews. Darmai over here, he's referring to a blorit or certain type of haircut, as Rashi indicates over here, which again is somewhat along the lines of a mohawk. They used to shave the sides and then grow out the front and the back. The back was in a ponytail. And the front they used to braid and then leave with little hairs sticking out of it. So whether it's referring to the entirety, where they have it braided and then free hairs, or just referencing to the free hair part of it, where they, after the braid, the hairs were hanging out in the front, in the bangs. So that is either similar to what we said in the Braita, and he's just explaining, giving an example, some sort of way that you could picture what we're speaking about in the Braita, and he's giving an indication of what the meaning of the Braita is. Or it could be that Abaye is actually coming up with a new din, which is tzrichli frodaki tzitzutu du'amarai. You have to actually divide them or split them up. And that could be that you need to keep the strings separate when you are making them. So that has two possibilities about what that means. So Tosafot back on Lama Tenemun Bet actually asked the question as to why we need two words to tell us that the tzitzit have to be free-hanging strings. We had one time the word was ptil, and we had the word tzitzit. So why do you need ptil and tzitzit? So Tosafot back on Lama Tenem Abed says, V'yesh lamar de'itstrik tzitzit, l'shmi'inun de'la'achar asiyatan tzirich lifrod. There's two different dinim. They have to be separate strings when you put them in to start with, and that means that you have to have separate strings. Then make a deal, which is the tied part of the knotted part up top. Then they have free-hanging strings, which is the anaf. So Tosafot says that anaf, but that comes out of the word ptil. Although, again, from our Gemara, it sounds from the Braita, that might even come out of the word tzitzit. But then Tosafot says, why do I need two words to tell me that you need an anaf, that you need strings that are hanging over here? And so Tosafot says that the word tzitzit comes to teach you, you need to separate the tzitzit. You actually need to pull them apart, which is brought the halacha by the Mishnah Brura, tzadik ifrod tzitziotav tamid. That's what the word tzitzit stands for. It's an acronym for the fact that a tzaddik will separate his tzitziot at all times. That means that you should make sure that the anaf, the hanging part of the tzitzit, don't get entangled. And you should pull them apart so that they're actually separate. That might be for one of two reasons. One reason is that it doesn't turn into a gedil. Because if you don't start pulling the strings apart, then not only do you have gedil up top, then the bottom part starts to become a gedil because it's wound together. Or the other possibility is that when you had tchelet, then the white strings and the tchelet strings needed to be separated from each other so they could be separately identifiable. On the other hand, if they wound themselves together, they wouldn't be separately identifiable because you're trying to keep the tchelet and levan contrasted and separate in the anaf piece. And that's the reason for the separating, which means that today we're only doing it zecher to the being mafrid the tzitziot. Or it could simply mean that you just need an anaf, you need free-hanging strings, and if they get twined, they're not going to be free-hanging strings, and we want that to be the case, so we just pull them apart so that they are separate. So we're down in the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Chet, Seif Zayin, Sarich, Lafrid Chutei Atzitzit, Zeh Mizeh. The Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Magen Avraham that if you're coming late to shul, and if you're going to have to separate your tzitzit, that's going to make you late and miss Tefillah B'Tzibur, better not to do it. And then he quotes from the Arizal, what we said before, that tzitzit is Roshei Tevot, Tzadik Yafrit Tzitziotav Tamid. And Mishnah Berurah in the Ber Halacha then says the reasoning behind the Magen Avraham is that Ayom Ein Zeh Rak Zecher Dezman HaTchelet, and that the requirement of separating them was the din when you had Tchelet and Lavan, you had to separate them completely. Although the Gra is Mesig on this, and he says that the din of Hafrada has nothing to do with Tchelet and Lavan, but even with strings of Lavan. And Ber Halacha says he has a suffix there according to the Gra, if the strings are actually intertwined, whether you can actually make a Brocha on the tzitzit. He says maybe at worst they're like gardumim, and you look at them as if they're not there, and they're still gardumim, and you can make a brach on them. Or maybe this is something that makes it pasul because of the fact that there's no afrada. You may not be able to make a bracha without separating out the strings, and that's the practice of many people to separate out the strings before they make the bracha on the talit. the Mishnah Berurah does bring the option to do that before you put it away. Meaning that if you pull away the strings and you count them and check them before you put away in the bag, then you take it out in the morning, nothing's changed inside the bag, and that'd be enough, and that can save you time in the morning if you do it when you put it away. Although the Chazon Ish writes on that Bir Halacha, that's Enum Akev Divyavad, and it's only Mishum Noi Mitzvah, and therefore you can definitely make a bracha on it. So that's the din that comes out of here. Next din is, Tanur Banan, Hitila Lekeren, Oal Gdil Ksheira. You put them on the corner, you put them on the Gdil, it's Ksheira. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Posel B'Shteyem says both of them are problematic. So Rashi here describes, Alekeren means, Asfat Chudash Lekeren. At the edge of the corner, right at the corner or the edge of the corner, that's one. So Rashi over here gives two descriptions of what ala gedil means. He says it's either, and in both cases it seems to be that these are additional strings that are added at the end of the weave in order to hold it in place, which is that they put an extra thick string along the weave either to create a hem or a seam at the end of the beged. And so that string is not woven, it's simply right across and creates a seal or an edge to the beged, and that's where it ends. Now that can be both across the beged, meaning along the rochava beged, or it can be up and down on the sides. It can be at either sides, or it can even be at the end of the weave. You can have strings hanging off, like we have in our tzitzit, those strings that hang off the end of the tzitzit, or a really tight weave, or a binding at the edge of the beged which holds it in place and doesn't allow it to unravel or unwind, could be referencing to any one of those items. You can't put it on the keren, means right at the corner, the tip of the corner, and you can't put it, according to Rashi, on the gedil, which is on these extra strings. They are not considered to be a part of the beged, and therefore if you put them there, you're not hanging your tzitzit from the kanfei big dehem. It's a failure in the kanfei big dehem. So that's what Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, that it's too far down on the keren. Or if it is on this extra material, they are problematic because of the fact that you're not hanging it al kanfei big dehem. It's not in the knaf. Putting it right at the corner is not the knaf. And putting it on these extra strings, this hem or this seam, is also not on the corner. We're going to see in a second there is a minimum shiur that you need to move away from it when the halacha is brought down in terms of calculating that shiur. So Shulchan Aruch brings down that you can count that towards the minimum shiur, although the Ramah says, Tov shim dod shir kesher godil below hagdil. You should count it without the gdil, meaning that you should start when the actual beged starts and not count that towards the minimum shiur. Come on, azla hadam arav gidol marav, tzitzit tzricha shite no tefet ala keren. They have to be dripping or hanging on the keren. Shinemar al kanfei big dehem. It must be on the corners of your beged. Come on, who's that like? Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, who says that you can't have it all the way at the edge of the corner, it has to be further up. So Rashi over here says, what does that mean, that no tefet ala keren? Shadei tole umake ala keren. It should be hanging and banging on the keren. Kolomar, shegvienu lamala min ha-safa. You have to take it away from the edge of the beged. You have to raise it away from the seam lines or the edges of the beged, and therefore it's hanging on the corner. It's literally on the corner. That's what Rashi says over here. Quoted in the name of Rashi is a different interpretation, and that is something that's actually pretty important, which is that when you have your tzitzit at the corner, you can have them hang down, which is like this, or you can have them hang from the side, which is that the corner here, if you pull them from the side, they're hanging on the side, and then they are hanging on the corner. So that actually is brought down the halacha. This is brought down by the Shulchan Aruch, there should be no tefet ala keren. And that means that you should have them hanging off the side and not hanging off the bottom, so that they are no teif. They're hanging on the keren and not just falling straight down. And so the Mishnah Berurah says it's kedai to move them over to ensure that they are on the side and that they hang on the keren, although he says b'diavad it's not a problem, but the chatchila you should move them to the side. That's the view of Rashi, not brought over here. Rashi over here just simply says they have to be away from the corner so that they're hanging on the corner. The Bala Itur says that you actually have to put two holes into the kanaf that you see in the tzitzit. Some of the chassidim are makbi to get a tzitzit like that, where you have two holes in the corner, and there it's hanging literally on the corner. Instead of being through the corner, it's hanging literally on the corner, because you have two holes, and then it's attached to those two holes, and then hanging on the corner. So that's the other possible interpretation of what it means to be no tefet ala keren. In all these cases, what the Gemara is saying is, that's the shita of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, because Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says you can't put it near the edge. You gotta put it further up. The reason you have to put it further up is for all these reasons. According to Rashi here, further up is so that it's not on the corner, but hanging on the corner. It's hanging down. The other Rashi version, which is coming from the side, means that it should hang literally on the corner, and you can only do that if you pull it up. If you do it right on the edge, it's not going to hang on the corner. Or for the balayitor, you need two holes for it to hang on the corner. Obviously, you can't do that at the edge of the beged, because it's not going to be hanging on the corner. You want it inside so that it hangs down, laying on the corner of the beged. So that's another halacha that comes out of here. Again, the Mishnah Berurah says the chatchila one should be makpid to pull their tzitzit up to the sides of the beged so that they hang on the keren itself. So Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, b'tzarich l'archik melo kesher gudal. You have to put them, the minimum amount that they must be away from the edge of the beged is melo, the amount of kesher. Kesher means a knuckle or a joint, gudal of the thumb. So the way Rashi interprets it is that it's the first knuckle of the thumb. So the minimum amount they must be away from the edge is the space from the tip of your thumb to your first knuckle. That's the amount that they have to be away from the side of the beged. Now we learned yesterday the measurement of 3 etzba'ot was the amount that they had to be away, but that was 3 of the width of your thumb. Tosafot yesterday discusses where on your thumb you measured the width. He says our Gemara ignores it completely, but in the Gemara in Zvachim it says bezichruto. And there the Gemara, it's not clear whether the Gemara means at the tip, at the rosh, the head of the thumb, or it means at the thickest point of the thumb, which is at the knuckle. But both those cases are speaking about the width of the thumb, not the length of the thumb. In this case, we're speaking about the length of the thumb. So here is the minimum shiur, and we'll see in a second the interplay between the two. That's the view of Rashi. If you look in their Beinu Gershom over here, Beinu Gershom says, Hainu kesher sheni shel gudal. When it says the joint, it does not mean the knuckle. It means where it attaches to the wrist. It's the second joint of the thumb. Tahainu k'orech etzba hagudal. Tahainu betoch gimel etzbaot. He says that it means from the tip of your thumb to your second joint, where it attaches to the wrist. He says that's the equivalent of lining up your thumb 3 times widthwise, and that will give you the same measurement. Ve'idi chad shiurahu. That's the same shiur. The shiur we saw yesterday of 3 etzba'ot, which is the width of 3 thumbs. The width of 3 thumbs equals from the tip of your thumb to your second joint. And he says they're giving actually the same shiur over here. Obviously, this will have a huge nafka mina as to how you read the remainder of the Gemara. Ve'itztich the Rav Papa, ve'itztich the Rav Yaakov. Rabbi Yaakov is what we brought over here about the amount of the thumb, either to the first knuckle or to the second joint. And then we need Rav Papa, who is from yesterday's Dafu Paskin, that the tzitzit have to be 3 etzba'ot away from the side, which is 3 widths of a thumb away from the side. De'imi Rav Papa, how we just said Rav Papa, avimino toch gimel, tolo leichak tvei, that you're not supposed to go past 3 thumbs worth of the side of the beged. Kama demer karev male. It's the maximum distance, and therefore the closer you are to the edge of the beged, the better you would be. So it's strict the Rabbi Yaakov. So Rabbi Yaakov comes in and says, now we're going to read it like Rashi, you have to have a minimum away from the safa. On the other hand, even the Rabbi Yaakov, had you just said Rabbi Yaakov, I mean, lo kesher gudal, to lo li karev tvei. That's a minimum shiur of how much you must be away. Kama derachik male. And the further away it is, the better. Tzricha, therefore we need both. So the way Rashi's reading this is, Rav Papa is giving you the maximum shiur, Rav Yaakov is giving you the minimum shiur. So the minimum amount you need to be away from the edge of the beged is from the tip of the thumb to the knuckle. That will tell you how far away you have to be at least from the corner of the beged. The maximum you can be away from the corner of the beged is 3 thumbs measured sideways. The rochav, the width of your thumb, 3 times, 3 etzba'ot, that's the maximum you can be away. And that's what they're teaching you. One's giving you the maximum, one's giving you the minimum. You would have thought a minimum, and then how far away you want to be is great. That's why you have the maximum. The maximum you have thought, the closer you are, the better. That's why you have a minimum. According to the Rabbeinu Gershom, the Gemara is interplaying between the two. Because of the way that they stated it, it looks like one is a minimum shiur, one's a maximum shiur, but they're the same shiur. They're 3 etzba'ot. Which means the conclusion of the Gemara is, they have to be exactly 3 etzba'ot away from the corner, because they're both giving you the same shiur, according to Rabbeinu Gershom. And therefore, you'd have to put it exactly 3 etzba'ot away from the corner in order to be yotzei the mitzvah tzitzit, which is a pretty high demand to get it exactly 3 etzba'ot away from the corner and not have it move. So, Gemara writes in Siman Yud Aleph, says Yasen Nekev Beorech Atalit Lo Lamala Migimel Etzba'ot Hainu Gudlin, not more than 3 thumbs away. Mipnei She'enu Nikra Kanaf, because you're too far away. Velo Lamato Mikshur Sheyesh Mikesher Gudal Ad Tziporen, and not closer to the edge then from the knuckle until the nail, the edge of the nail, the tip of your thumb, Mishum Shneamar Ala Knaf. It's got to be on the corner. Too close to the edge is not called the corner, and too far away is not called the corner. There's an area that's called the corner. Aga, the Rama writes, Umodadim Zeh Biyosher, in a straight line, Velo Belachson Min HaKeren, and not on a diagonal from the corner. So he makes it clear here that it means straight off the edge, not on an angle from the corner. That's number one. Yesh Amrim, Shebetoch Rochav HaBeged, Ein Lo Shior. Shulchan Aruch brings in the next Seif, that if it's from the edge of the beged on the side, there is no shiur. The only shiur that we spoke about here was from the base up, and that's what is being determined over here. From the side, there is no shiur. Ve'yesh omrim shedin rochav habeged kedin orech. He says that there are those that say it's exactly the same. The distance you need from the base of the tzitzit is the same you need from the side of the tzitzit. Ve'nirim divrehem. And that makes a lot of sense to me. And that's the way that our holes are placed into the tzitzit, is that they're equidistant from the base as they are from the side, in order to make sure they're within the shiurim that we just noted over here. More than a kesher a gudul away, more than from the tip of your thumb to the knuckle away from the edge, but no more than 3 a gudulin away from the edge of your beged. So that's where the hole goes. And then again, we just spoke about the fact that you're supposed to hang the tzitzit, which the Shulchan Aruch brings from the side rather than straight down. Although the Mishnah Berurah says the one thing you cannot do is have the tzitzit on the angle going towards the corner. Because he says that's datat stukim and the karaim. They read al-kanvei bigdam, they learn literally the karen of the choda, the edge of the beged, and therefore if you wear it on the diagonal, meaning that the string is hanging on that diagonal, that's a problem, because that's not what Chazal said, and therefore we intentionally make sure that it falls from the karen either straight down, which is not the optimal way, or off the side, which is no tefet al karen, which is the way that Rashi seems to indicate one should do. Ravina Rav Sama v'yatvei kamei de Ravashi. So Ravina Rav Sama was sitting in front of Ravashi. Chazi Rav Sama le karnei de glimei de Ravina de Sotar. He saw that the corner, the edge of his beged had come unraveled or unwoven. That's the way that I would have read it. That's the second interpretation that Rashi brings. Rashi brings the first interpretation that the hole itself started to unravel. You can see that many times, that the whole of the tzitzit starts to expand because it tears, and even though there's a seam around it many times, it slowly but surely starts to widen out the hole. Because of that, butzar in below kesher agudal. And therefore now, his tzitzit were close to the edge, less than the minimum shiur of from the tip of the thumb to the knuckle. So because either the beged became unraveled, and that was a shorter beged, or the hole expanded, so that now you brought it closer to the edge. For either one of those reasons, his tzitzit were close to the edge. Amarlei, lo sabar lamar lahad Rabbi Yaakov. Rav Sama looks over to Ravina and says, don't you hold the Rabbi Yaakov, that there's a minimum shiur away from the edge? How come you're not worried about that? Amarlei, Ravina turns back to him and says, b'shat asiya itmar. That din is only lachatchila at the time you make the beged. So similar to what we saw before with gardumim, which is that when you start the beged, you have to have the minimum shiurim of the strings and the tzitziot. Once they become gardumim, afterwards it's still kasher, as long as you started originally with proper tzitzit. Similarly over here, if you start with the tzitzit hung on the beged in the proper location, if after that they move closer because of the wear and tear on the beged, that's not a problem because it was done originally properly, and the wear and tear is fine because that's still considered to be the kanaf because it was the kanaf originally when you put it on the beged. Ichsif. So then Rav Sam was embarrassed by the fact that Ravina upended him. He was trying to chop Ravina on the fact that he didn't have it sitzit on properly. Ravina tells him, Rav Yaakov, you're quoting him, you're not even quoting him correctly. It's only a din lechatchila, it's not a din after the fact. So Amar Le Ravashi, so Ravashi leans over to Rav Sam and says, lo tatkif lacha. Don't be so upset. Don't let this eat at you. Because chad minayu katre minan. One of them is like two of us. So that is quoted in another context. So it's a cross-reference to the Gemara in Ketubot, which is dealing with the Milot of Eretz Yisrael. And that you can see in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he says, mibnei Eretz Yisrael adif katre minan. Someone from Eretz Yisrael is good as two of us from Bavel. Avir ad Eretz Yisrael machkim. The quality of the air in Eretz Yisrael, of a spiritual air, is machim, makes a person wiser, and therefore that one of them is better than two of us, which would imply that Ravina came from Eretz Yisrael, which is interesting. There are two Ravinas. There is a Ravina that we probably are speaking about here who is a contemporary of Rav Ashri to Ravina Rav Ashri argue all over Shas, and it seems to be that he's the contemporary. There is another Ravina who is a little later, who's an eighth generation Amora. Here we're talking about the Ravina, possibly is the sixth generation Amora. Because the Ravina is an eighth generation Amora. The Gemara says that Ravina and Rav Ashri were Sof Hora'ah. They're the end of Hora'ah, which is taken to mean that they brought about the closure of the Gemara, that they were the redactors or the beginning of the redaction process. The thing is that the Gemara itself was only closed or sealed around the year 500. Now, Ravina that we're speaking about here passes away in the year 421. And that is earlier than, obviously, when the Gemara is closed. So either you have to say that it's referencing to the fact that they began the process, but the process doesn't end for another two generations. I mean, they're a sixth generation of Moraim. At the eighth generation, it closes, but they begin the process of closing it, and then you have a closure to the Talmud that comes in the time around 500, 499, 500. But there isn't a Ravina at that time who's on that borderline, the eighth generation Amora, that Ravina. And he is actually the Rebbe of many of the Saburaim, which are the next group of individuals after the Amoraim or the Saburaim. And Ravina is their Rebbe, but he's an eighth generation Amora. So now, whether that maybe is the reference to that Ravina, it seems like both Ravinas saw Rav Ashri, although it's somewhat difficult only because that would mean that Ravina who saw Rava also saw Rav Ashri, and Rav Ashri who saw that Ravina also saw the next Ravina. It means that Rav Ashri had to live a decent amount of time in order to see both Ravinas. It's not impossible. But then it might be a reference to the second Ravina who is then alive at the time of the closure of the Gemara. So maybe that's the reference, that it's Rav Ashri and the second Ravina. Either way, they live in Bavel. And that's the problem here. We never find the Ravina came from Eretz Yisrael. And if you look in the biographies of Ravina, people cite that he came from Eretz Yisrael. Where do they get that from? Rashi and Menachot. This Gemara right here, they get it from Rashi, who says that he came from Eretz Yisrael, the same to what the Rabbeinu Gershom says over here. So that would be the one source for the fact that he came from Eretz Yisrael. The other alternative is that he came from Pumpedita. And we find that in Gemara and Brachot and other places, that the people from Pumpedita were very sharp. They were able, the expression that the Gemara uses, that they're able to get an elephant into the eye of a needle, which is that they could do such great pill-pull and figure out things that they could put an elephant into the eye of a needle. It's an expression of just how sharp they were. And this is the reference over here, is to the difference in the yeshivot. The Ravina came from Pumpedita, and Rav Ashri was from Matamachsia. And so Pumpedita, in relationship to whether it's Sura or Matamachsia, they were considered to be very sharp. And so they're saying about the people from Pumpedita, those guys are so sharp, they're like equal to two of us. Which is a more plausible explanation, only because we don't have any other evidence that Ravina came from Eretz Yisrael, other than the fact that Rashi over here and the Rabbeinu Gershom note that they came from Eretz Yisrael. Right now, in terms of hanging the strings, Rav Acha bar Yaakov, Rami Arba, Ve'ayif Lehu Meyef. He used to take four strings, loop them over. So he made them into a double, into a loop already. Then Ma'ayol Lehu Beglima. Then he used to push them through the hole of the beged. So before he put them through the hole in the beged, he used to loop them over. So he looped them, so now you have eight strings before you going into the hole. He places the looped end into the hole. Ve'avik lehu mevach. Then he takes the ends of the strings and pushes them through the loop. And by doing that, it'll tighten on the corner of the beged. It's the equivalent of putting the luggage tags on your luggage. The same way that you do that, you take it around the handle, you have a loop, and then you push the tag through it and you pull it tight. That's exactly what he's doing over here. He's pushing the loop through, putting the strings into the loop and pulling them tight. Now, that's because, he believes that you need to have gedil and gedilim in the place of the ptil, in the location of where you're tying it or connecting it to the beged, which means that he thinks you need to already have eight when it's going into the beged itself. Now, how he gets to eight is from gedil, gedilim, the Baal Tosfot over here say. Gedil is two, gedilim is four. And that's true of Lavan and the Techelet. You have the Gedil Gdilim of Techelet and Gedil Gdilim of Lavan. So you get to a total of eight in that way. Now his eight are generated by taking four strings and folding them over, and now you have eight with the loops. And then he's pushing them through the beged. So that's how he gets to his eight. But that's Tosafot at the beginning of the parak. We discussed this also, that he suggests that that might be the source for the fact that four Lavan work, four Techelet work, or Tchelet and Lavan work, and that could be either two and two, or four and four. Tosafot comes out with the sheet over there that you can actually put in 8 strings into your tzitzit and it won't be a problem about Tosif. And that's based on this idea of the Gedil Gdilim applying both to the Lavan and to the Tehillet. Now Rav Yirmiya, just give me a second, Rav Yirmiya Difti, Rami Tamnayu, Dinu Shitzar, Velo Aviklahu. So he does it in the way where he puts 8 strings in to get to 16 strings when they come through. So he's putting through the loop the way we do, but he starts with 8 strings. Tosafot says they're of the same view here. They both agree that you need 8. The question is, what type of 8? Do you start with 8 strings? Or do you loop the strings over, 4 strings and 8 up with 8 strings, but both of them agree that you need 8 strings going through the hole. So according to Rav Yirmiya Midifta, you push 8 strings through the hole, so now you end up with 16 ends down below. According to Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, you start out with 4 strings looped over, and then you're pushing 8 strings through the hole because they start with 4 that are looped over. So according to both of them, you end up with 8 strings through the hole. There's a question then, do you end up with 8 strings in total, or do you end up with 16 strings in total? And then we have a similar comment to what we saw by Tefillin, Marbere de Ravina, Ovid Kididan. Marbere Ravina does the way we do it, which means the way that we do it is we put 4 strings through the hole, and they double over to get to 8 strings in total. So that's our shita, which is gedil, gedilim, is 2, 4. 4 strings go through, and you end up with 8 strings once they're hanging through because they're looped through the hole. Now, Tosafot raises an issue, which maybe you're onto a little bit, which is that if you actually do this, the tzitzit can be easily taken out. Which is if you pull them through the loop and tighten them, you can pull the strings out, they can loosen out. It's not exactly, it's not a keshus kamiyama. Tosafot says if that was the case, what's the problem with kilayim? There's no kilayim any there. If you just pull them through the loop this way and tighten the loop, why is that called kilayim? That's not a permanent structure. That's not something you can undo. When you're tying it against itself, not against the beged. You have a whole knot, and the whole knot of thing would just pull through the loop. So Tosafot says that can't be the explanation, and therefore he says that he looped 7 of them through, and then took 1 string and knotted it around to create a permanent knot so that it could not be undone, and that's why there's a problem of kilayim. So Tosafot gives a slight different explanation than Rashi, because he wants it to be permanent so that it has a problem of kilayim and it will stay in place. And therefore he says you take one of the strings and you're kosher with one of those strings in order to ensure that after it goes through the loop, that's a permanent tying and not just loop through where you can pull it apart easily. Rav Nachman, Ashkan the Rav Adarbava, Ramachute, Vikamevarech Lasot Tzitzit. He was putting tzitzit into a beged and he made the brocha Lasot Tzitzit. Amalei, so in a mocking way he says, Matzitzi Shamana. What was that tzitzit tzitzit that I heard just before? What was that chirp chirp tzitzit tzitzit that you just said? Meaning that he's playing on him that he made this bracha when he's making the tzitzit. Hachi amarav, tzitzit ein tzricha bracha. When you make tzitzit, you don't make a bracha on the tzitzit. So Mar Baravina, what are you doing over here making a bracha on the tzitzit, on the making the tzitzit, when Rav says you don't? Ki nachnav shei de Ravuna. After Rav Huna passed away, Al Rav Chista Lemirme Derava Derav. So these are both Talmidim of Rav. The Gemara in some places seems to change the order of Rav Huna and Rav Chista. From here you would see that Rav Huna was older and was the Talmid of Rav. And Rav Chista would have been a Talmid of Rav Huna, so like a grand Talmid of Rav. Although in other places, again, their names are reversed. Tosafot says maybe there were 2 Rav Hunas. But anyway, they are both connected to each other and connected to the yeshiva of Rav. And they always are quoting Rav throughout Shas. Mirmah the Rav of Rav is a steer in Rav. Umiyamah Rav tzitzit ein tzricha baracha. Does Rav really believe that there's no bracha needed on tzitzit, the making of tzitzit? Bamarav Yehuda Amarav. So we have another person who quotes from Rav all the time, Rav Yehuda, who learned by Rav first and later by Shmuel, and who brings memro from both of them throughout Shas. Minayin le tzitzit bovei kuchavim shi psula. How do you know that the making of tzitzit by an ovei kuchavim is problematic? Shenemar daber el bnei Yisrael basulahem tzitzit bnei Yisrael yasu v'lo ovdei kochavim. Jews can make tzitzit, ovdei kochavim cannot make tzitzit. So that is bnei Yisrael yasu v'lo ovdei kochavim yasu. By my rumya, what exactly is the question? These are 2 different dinim. One din is that a goy can't make tzitzit. Another one is that you don't make a bracha on the making of tzitzit. So now Amar Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef explains now. Kasavar Rav Chista. This is Rav Chista's thought process. Kol mitzvah sheira ba'ovei kochavim, b'Yisrael ain't tzarich lebarech. Anything that a non-Jew can make on your behalf, you do not need to make a bracha on it when you make that item. Kol mitzvah shepsula ba'ovei kochavim, anything that an ovei kochavim cannot make, cannot do something for, b'Yisrael tzarich lebarech. For a Jew, you do make a bracha. So here, since a goy cannot make it, that would imply that a Jew makes a bracha on it. The reason being, and Rashi says, the Tosafot says something similar, is that you can't say, asher kidishanu b'mitzvotav vitzivanu. How do you say vitzivanu, that God commanded us to make tzitzit, when the goy can also make the tzitzit? We're not particularly commanded to make the tzitzit. Even the goy himself can make the tzitzit. So it's not a particular tzivui to us. The tzivui to us is to wear the tzitzit. That's the unique aspect of asher kidishanu b'mitzvotav vitzivanu. He commanded us to wear them. But he didn't command us to make them because the goy can also make them. Again, to me, it seems like a precarious limud because of the fact that you can interpret vitzivanu means he commanded us to do the mitzvah, and because he commanded us to do the mitzvah, therefore we have the tzitzit be made. So I don't know, to me it's not as mukhrach or compelling to say that you can't make a bracha on a siyat tzitzit, because what you're saying is since we have the mitzvah of tzitzit, therefore we are making the tzitzit. There we can make a bracha. But Rav Chisda says that it's problematic or impossible for it to be that if a goy can make it, that you would make a bracha on the tzitzit. The Tosfot over here is midayek from the Gemara, something that has important halachic ramifications, which is minayin letzitzit b'ovdei chachamim shipsula mashma from here ha ishak sheira. It sounds from here that the problem is a goy and not an isha, which means bnei Yisrael b'ovdei chachamim. Because he said, if you want to exclude an isha, then you should say, kosha enu b'liv isha, enu basiya. Whoever doesn't wear tzitzit doesn't make tzitzit. So if you did that, the woman who doesn't wear tzitzit doesn't make tzitzit. The Gemara brings that limud in other areas of halacha. For instance, by tefillin. Whoever doesn't wear tefillin doesn't make tefillin, and therefore a woman is psula. But the Gemara does not bring that, which leads to a large controversy with regards to the making of tzitzit, as to whether women who make tzitzit are the tzitzit considered to be ksheirim. Because over here, the Gemara only excludes an ovei kochavim, and not a woman. And therefore, the halacha is brought down as a machloket, as to whether women are psulot from the making of tzitzit. This is in Simin Yudalot Sif Aleph. The Shulchan Aruch says, tzitzit that were made by an Yehudi psul, defeat the barrel b'nei Yisrael, lafuke an Yehudi. Vaisha ksheira la sotan. Women can make tzitzit, it's not a problem at all. Haga, Rama says, v'yesh machmirim latzrich anashim siyasu otam. There are some people who are makbid that only men make them. V'tov lasok ken lechatchila. Lechatchila, we should do that. That's the better way to do it. And he says, look at the Mishnah Berurah brings down, dichtiv b'nei Yisrael v'asu mashma gam l'mayet b'not Yisrael. Exactly that limu. B'nei Yisrael excludes a goy, but also excludes b'not Yisrael. The big issue is that they have to be done lishma, which is the big issue of tzitzit, that we need lishma to be done. And there are many, I think, modern-day poskim that suggest that if a woman does it, that it's good enough for the ketanim to wear. Since there is a daya that it works by women, and that bidyabad, even that Mishnah Berurah writes that we assume that if the woman made it, we believe that she did it lishma, and that it's okay. So therefore, bidyabad, it's mutar, when it comes to the mitzvah of chinuch by tzitzit, then they are more makil with regards to women doing the asiyah and making the tzitzit. But when it comes to a man's tzitzit, we're machmir like the Rama, and we don't have women make the tzitzit, but it's an interesting diuk that Tosafot makes over here that has huge halachic implications as to whether women can make the tzitzit and do the asiyah, the shame mitzvah tzitzit. Klolohu, is this really a principle that any time a goy can do it, no bracha making it, goy can't do it, then there is a bracha? Vari mila, dekshera boved kochavim, brit mila, which can be done by a non-Jew. Tanya, ir shein ba rofei Yisrael, a city in which there's no medical, Jewish medical professional. Over here, the rofei is synonymous with a moel, because he does the cutting and the healing of the baby, so he's called a rofei. Ve'esh ba rofei armai. And you have an option there in the city, no Jewish doctor or moel, but you have a moel, non-Jewish moel, a rofei kuti, and you have a kuti who's also, and a kuti who's also a moel. So the Tanakama, again, we saw this together in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, imol armai, valyimol kuti, divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says, better to use the non-Jew than to use the kuti. Rabbi Yehuda Meir, kuti velo armai. Says, better to use the kuti and not the armai. So Rabbi Yehuda seems to believe that kutim are geri emet. They are proper converts, and therefore we'd rather pick a kuti who's going to do it, even though they have problems with some of the mitzvot that they do and some things that they do, but generally they were geri emet and they do it for the right reasons. and the chashash that the goy might kill the baby, because we have a chashash of shfichut damim with regards to a goy. So if you allow him to do the milah, he might do something that would cause the baby to die. So better that a kuti does it than an armai. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir believes that the kutim were either not geri emet, or they were geri emet, but then we found that they started to worship har grizim. And now worried about that the kuti is going to have the wrong makshova. When he does the milah, he's going to do the milah, the shame har grizim, and that'll make it a problematic milah. The armai, the non-Jew on the other hand, has no vested interest in the milah because he doesn't perform milah. The only time he does a milah is for a Jewish client, and he just does it for whatever they want. He doesn't do it because it's a religious practice of his, or even a secular practice of his. This goes to what the Baal Tosafot say over here. It's also the Tosafot says it in Avodah Zarah, and we discussed it extensively then, which Tosafot says that there's certain items where you have a stam lishma, that the doing of the action of the activity, the default status is it's done lishma. What he says is milah is that way. Now again, I mentioned there that it's changed today. In their day, the only people who got brit milah were Jews. So anybody who performed the brit milah is doing it lishma, because the only reason you give a brit milah is because you're Jewish and getting for being a Jew. So that means for a kuti who has ulterior motives, you have a problem, because he has active kavana to do it for something else. A Jew who does it, obviously is doing it for the right reasons. A goy who does it has no vested interest. He doesn't perform medical procedures like this. The only time he does it is when a Jew tells him to do it. So he does it like the Jew tells him, and he does it stam lishma. And therefore, Tosfot says that the stam, or the assumption here, is the default of a milah is lishma. I said today that's changed because today, medically, people get a brit milah, even nothing to do with the religious reason or the reasons, and then you can't argue that it's stam lishma. The stam is that they do it for medical purposes. You have to have active kavana, and then maybe today a goy would be pasul based on this Baal Tosafot. Tosafot then goes on to explain other issues of lishma, other areas where we say this default idea of lishma. And he speaks about writing holy books, things like that, Sifrei Torah. Why isn't it that it's stam lishma? And then the Gemara seems to indicate because they write for themselves, so they write holy books for themselves, and therefore they have ulterior motives when they write the books. But this Tosafot here, as well as the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, discusses which things are considered to be lishma, stammed by default, and which things are areas of halacha where the goy has ulterior motives or might do it for his own purposes, which would undermine the lishma aspect that you need. But over here you see, from both of them, non-Jew would be fine. So it's a question of who we give preference to. Would we rather a kuti does it or would we rather a non-Jew does it? But both of them agreed that a non-Jew could do it. And despite the fact that a non-Jew can do a brit milah, we still tzarich lebarich. The Jew makes a bruch on the milah. Damar mar, hamal omer, baruch asher kedishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu al ha-milah. So we make a bracha on the milah, the doing of the milah, the action of milah. There is a second bracha, which is on the status of being mahul. At least that's the chakira that many say, that this bracha is about doing the milah. The bracha of shelach niso b'rbito shel Avram Avinu is this, on being a status of a mahul. And therefore, that bracha is made not by the person who necessarily does the milah, but by the father of the child. In either case, whether he does the milah or it's done by a shliach, he makes that bracha because that's on the status of the child becoming mahul. But the bracha of ala milah is on the actual doing of the milah. That's despite the fact that a goy can perform the milah. So that would undermine Rav Chista's position. So Gemara says, midehu taima el rav. Wait, this whole sugya and whole Rav's question is according to Rav Shita. But Rav, mitzal pasil. And Rav over there in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says that it is pasul, and Ovi Kochavim cannot perform a milah. Ditmar minayin lemilah bovi kodim shepsula. How do you know that Ovi Kochavim cannot give a brit milah? Daru bar papa mishmei de Rav amar. So here you see it's a memra of Rav. So Daru bar papa says the name of Rav, bata et briti tishmor. That you have to keep my covenant. And as Rashi says over here, linimol kamotcha ani mosro. It's a covenant. And I give over that covenant to other peoples who are members of the covenant. Only people who are members of the covenant can bestow the covenant on another party. So if you're a member of the covenant, then you can do a brit milah. If you're not a member of the covenant, you can't do a brit milah. Yochanan Amar, himol imol. The pasuk says himol imol, and he reads it, hamal imol. One who has a brit milah, imol, can perform a brit milah. So only someone with a brit milah can perform a brit milah. That doesn't just mean you have a circumcision. It means that you have a circumcision that is a valid mitzvah of circumcision, where you have an obligation to have a milah. So if you are mal, then you can be imol. In the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, we discussed the nafkaminot between these two regions. They both seem to indicate that a Jew can do it, a non-Jew can't do it. Nafkamina might be for a Jew who does not have a milah. So a Jew is an arel. Is he part of the brit? Is he part of the covenant? The answer is probably yes, that he is a member of the covenant, even though he doesn't have a brit milah, so he might be able to perform a brit milah. And then a mal, imo, one who has a milah, can give a milah. He doesn't have a milah, so maybe he can't give a milah. So over there, the Achronim discuss the nafkaminot, or the possibilities of what the nafkaminot are between these two reasons that are given. So now, the Gemara says milah is not a question, because Rav, the Shitoto, and milah thinks there's no chance that nobody could come in and could do it. So nobody can't do it. That's why you make a bracha on the milah. Then the Gemara says, Sukkah misaylei, tefillin avei tiyuvtei. Sukkah supports the contention of Rav Chista. Tefillin undermine the contention of Rav Chista. Hari sukkah, dekshira bovei kochavim. In Yana Dioma, sukkah can be made by a goy. Because the Tanya, sukkat ovdei kochavim, sukkat nashim, sukkat behema, sukkat kutin, sukkah mikol makom, kshira. As long as you have a sukkah can be made by a goy, by a woman, can be made by an animal, can be made by a kuti, not made l'shem sukkah. You don't need a sukkah l'shem sukkah, you just need a sukkah. It has to be a structure that is made for shade. As long as it's a structure that's made for shade, that can be then co-opted to be used on the holiday of Sukkot as a sukkah. As long as the sukkah was made halakhically or properly. So as long as it conforms to all the halakhot of sukkah, the schach was put on after the walls were put up, and has all the minimum requirements that a sukkah has in terms of size, height, and all of those things, then it's fine. Ubi Yisrael ain't tzarich lebarich. On the other hand, a Jew does not have to make a bracha on sukkah. So you see here, a goy can make it, and a Jew doesn't make a bracha. So that's exactly what Rav Chista says. When a goy can do it, there's no bracha on the asiyat sukkah. The Tanya, we have a braita. Hoseh sukkah latzmo omer baruch ata Hashem Elokeinu melech olam shechiyanu v'kiyamanu v'hegiyanu lezman hazeh. Someone who builds a sukkah, makes a bracha of shechiyanu. Bali yeshiva, you come to sin in it. Omer baruch ata Hashem Elokeinu melech olam asher kedishanu mitzvotav v'tzivanu leshev basukkah. That Hashem commanded us to sit in the sukkah. V'ilu lasot sukkah lo mevarech. What's clear from here is, at the time of building you make a shechiyanu, time of doing the mitzvah you make a leshev the sukkah. What's completely absent here from the breita is any bracha on lasot sukkah. There's no bracha on making the sukkah. Now, even though there is a bracha of shechiyanu in the making of the sukkah, that's from the joy or the excitement of approaching the mitzvah, and that can be associated with the, not just the doing of the mitzvah or the completion of the mitzvah, but even in the beginning of the mitzvah or the building and making of the mitzvah, so that when you build the sukkah, there's a din of shechiyanu. But again, there has to be something in that process that is ordained or mandated by the Torah, and that we'll speak to in a couple of moments as to why these unique mitzvot are picked to have a shechiyanu associated with them. That has halachic implications, which is number one, you can make a shechiyanu over the building of the sukkah. We do not normally do this. We follow the halachic ruling that we wait to make the shechiyanu together with the beginning of the chag on the Zman HaChag. And we make the shechiyanu together with the Kiddush on the night of Sukkot. And in that bracha of shechiyanu, we incorporate two things. Shechiyanu on the holiday of Sukkah, and shechiyanu on the mitzvah of Sukkah, the performance of the mitzvah of Sukkah. And that's why the placement of the shechiyanu is different than other situations. Normally, you would put the shechiyanu immediately after Kiddush, because the shechiyanu is going on the Kiddush Hayom. When it comes to the first night of Sukkot, now in Eretz Yisrael, there's no Kiddush on the second night, but in Chutz La'aretz, it has implications for the second night. So on the first night of Sukkot, we put the shechiyanu after the Leishei Basukkah. We make Kiddush, say Leishei Basukkah, and then a shechiyanu, because the shechiyanu is applying to both the Kiddush Hayom and to the Leishei Basukkah during the mitzvah. So we want the shechiyanu to be associated with the actual performance of the mitzvah, therefore we don't make the shechiyanu on the binyan, on the building of the sukkah, because then you would have already covered the mitzvah. But technically, you could have made it at that point, and therefore the shechiyanu that you make on the first night covers the building of the sukkah, the sitting of the sukkah, and it comes after Leishei Basukkah. Chutz La'aretz, when you make the Kiddush on the second night, you make the shechiyanu appended right immediately after the Kiddush. You make Kiddush, shechiyanu, and then Leishei Basukkah, because you already made the shechiyanu on the sukkah. Maybe the first night wasn't the real night of Sukkot, it only starts the next night. Why can't you make it? Then you should do exactly what you did the first night. The first night was Erev Sukkot, and not really Sukkot, then your shechiyanu didn't matter. The answer is, it does work. Because you can make Shechianu on the binyan of Sukkah. You can make Shechianu before Sukkot. So that would be the same thing over here. If you make the Shechianu the first night of Yom Tov, which maybe isn't Yom Tov in Chutz Laaretz, that Shechianu covers you for Leishev Sukkah, for the Sukkah, because Shechianu and Sukkah, as the Gemara says here, can be made even on the binyan of Sukkah, even before Sukkot ever comes. You can make the bracha on the Sukkah. And that's why it works in Chutz Laaretz, whether or not the first night is Yom Tov. Alright, tefillin to Yuftei. Tefillin undermine this principle of Rav Chisda. Alright, tefillin to psulot bovdei kochabim. Tefillin cannot be made by a non-Jew. The tani Rav Chinina brei the Rava bein parshinaya. Sefer Torah, tefillin umizuzot shekatvan stuki. Kuti, obrei kochabim, eved, isha, vekatan, mumar, psulim. All these individuals are psulim when it comes to the tefillin, shenemar. Ukshartem, ukhtaftem. Ukshartam, ukhtaftam. Either way, there's a juxtaposition of kshira, of the tefillin, to the ktiva of the mizuzot. And that teaches us, koshi yeshno bikshira, yeshno biktiva. Anybody who is obligated in the mitzvah of kshira, putting on tefillin, can write the tefillin. So that will preclude all the individuals that we have over here. Yisrael ain't zarech levarech, yet there is no brocha on the making of tefillin. So here where a goy can't make it, nevertheless there is no bracha on the making of tefillin, and that undermines the principle of Rav Chisda, the Shalach Rav Chia Brei de Rav Huna Mishmei de Rav Yochanan. This we saw back on Daf Lamed Vav, Amud Aleph. Al tefillin sheyad omer Baruch Asher Kedishanu Mitzvah Bitzivanu Leaniach Tefillin. Al tefillin shel Rosh omer Baruch Asher Kedishanu Mitzvah Bitzivanu Al Mitzvah Tefillin. That's the way that we do it as Ashkenazim based on the sheet of the Reveinu Tam. That the Gemara says that you make a bracha on the Shoyat and a bracha on Shel Rosh, not like Rashi and the Pesach of the Sfaradim, that this is only true when you Pesach, when you spoke, you interrupted between your Tefillin Shoyat and Tefillin Shel Rosh, then you have to make a bracha on the Tefillin Shel Rosh. Otherwise, you don't need to make a bracha on the Tefillin Shel Rosh. So this, according to them, is in a case where you interrupted between the Tefillin Shoyat and Tefillin Shel Rosh. Rabbeinu Tam, this is your basic case. You make a bracha on the Shoyat Shel Rosh, on the other hand, to make tefillin, nobody makes a bracha on the making of tefillin. Elalav hainu taima. So the Gemara here says, that's not the reason. That's not the right reason. Now, you can read Ella. Ella always means a rejection. Question, what did we reject here? Did we reject Rav Chisda completely? In terms of making bracha on asiyah, it has nothing to do with this, and Rav Chisda is just completely wrong. Or are we saying that Rav Chisda is wrong in his reasoning or the principle that we established, but there's another principle that governs over here, which is called mitzvah, the siyata gemar mitzvah. Anything where the action that you're doing is the completion of the mitzvah, could go in milah. What you're doing in the milah is the action and completion of the mitzvah. Apagav dekshere bovi kuchavim b'Yisrael tzarech lebarech. Doesn't matter who can do the milah, a Jew makes a bracha then because the asiyah itself is the asiyata mitzvah. B'chol mitzvah d'asiyata, lav gemar mitzvah, anything where the making of the object is not the completion of the mitzvah, could go on tefillin, like tefillin. Afgav de psulot, bovei kochavim, even though an obi kochavim can't make them, b'Yisrael ain't otzarech lebarech. Then you can't make a bracha on tefillin, making tefillin, because that's not the end of the mitzvah. Making the tefillin, just facilitates your ability to do the kshira, and do the mitzvah of tefillin afterwards. So therefore you can't make a bracha of asiyah on the tefillin. We'll continue the Gemara 1 second, but Tosfot over here brings an important Yerushalmi. It says, the Perek HaRu'eh, which is the Gemara in Brachot and Yerushalmi, Ma'atzrich levarech asiyat tzitzit, sukkah u'tfilin. It says that you have to make a bracha on making tzitzit, making sukkah, making tefillin. All against our Gemara over here. Our Gemara says you don't make a bracha on any of these items, and the Yerushalmi says you make a bracha on all three of them when you make them. It says, V'oroche bi'o be'erech tzatz gimel. The Cholek al Hashas Shelanu clearly argues on the Bavli, it's a Machlok and Bavli and Yerushalmi as to whether you make a bracha on them. Ube Tosefta de Brachot, in the Tosefta de Brachot it says, Tani Ose Tzitzit, Latzmo Mibarech Shechianu. Someone who makes his own tzitzit makes a bracha of Shechianu. Laitos would say, that's no different than what we say in the Gemara of Bavli in Brachot, that al Kelim Chadashim, anytime you have new clothes, you make a Shechianu. So it says, you're not making a shechianu on the making of the tzitzit, you're making a shechianu on the new beged that has these tzitzit in it. Whether it's a new beged or a beged with these new tzitzit, whatever it is, you're making a shechianu on that. And that's what the reference is to, not a reference to the fact that you need to make a bracha on the asiyat tzitzit. Although, if you look in the Ot Yud Bet of the Sheikh Nukul Bet that he brings, Rav Shrira Gaon Kadav, the Lo Samchinin Allah, we don't rely on this to make a shechianu. Shachianu is only something that comes on a periodic basis, on a seasonal basis, and we don't make a bracha of Shachianu just on something new, on begadim chadashim or kelim chadashim, and therefore you wouldn't make Shachianu on the making of the tzitzit. But what is interesting here is that the Gemara entertains the possibility of a bracha on the asiyah of tzitzit, sukkah, and tefillin. Why are they focused on these three mitzvot? And more importantly, why does Yerushalmi say you do make a bracha on these three mitzvot? So there is a nitziv that's found in the She'iltot, the Rav Achai Gaon, where the Emek Sheila, he writes an important principle, which is, there are two parts of a mitzvah. There's what's called Hechsher Mitzvah, which is the preparation, the facilitation of doing the mitzvah, and there's the mitzvah itself. He says that by a number of mitzvot in the Torah, they are called Hechsher Mitzvah Shekotuv BaTorah. They're a Hechsher Mitzvah that's explicitly stated in the Torah. That the extra mitzvah is in the Torah, and since the extra mitzvah is in the Torah, that's what precipitates this view that there should possibly be a bracha in the Balbi, and the view in the Yerushalmi that there is a bracha in the Asiyah. It says by tzitzit, basulahem tzitzit, that you have to make the tzitzit. It's not simply wearing the tzitzit that's a mitzvah. The Torah tells you, basulahem tzitzit, the heksher, the facilitation of making the tzitzit is written in the Torah. So maybe there should be a bracha on the Asiyah. By Sukkot, it says, Chaga Sukkot Aselecha. We learn from that that the Sukkah has to be an Asiyah, possibly even an Asiyah Lishma. But there has to be an Asiyah of the Sukkah. You have to build the Sukkah, or make a Sukkah. So that Asiyah is a Heksher Mitzvah, HaKtuvah BaTorah. Again, it's a Heksher Mitzvah in the Torah. By the Tefillin, it's much harder to understand where that comes up. Tosfot already asked that in the past. Where do you know that the Asiyah that's tefillin has to be Lishma? Because we don't have any Asiyah that's written in the Torah with regards to tefillin. So Tosfot tried earlier to come up with ways or understandings as to how do we know that by tefillin and maybe even by mezuzah, that these are areas where there's a requirement of Asiyah Lishma and that there is an Asiyah written in the Torah. Because both of those, the Gemara says, Taseh velo min asui. They have to be made and not from asui. Implies that there's some mitzvah asiyah associated with them, both by tefillin and by mezuzah, which would also indicate that that's an extra mitzvah, an asiyah that's ketuvah b'Torah, because of that demand for taseh velo min asui. Based on that, then it seems that that's the source of the fact that these mitzvot in particular are chosen, and that's why you would possibly make a bracha on the asiyah, because it's an extra mitzvah, ketuvah b'Torah. So now the Gemara says, Ubitzitzit bahaka miflige. And by tzitzit, this is the machloket. Rashi over here says, baha plige, Rav Chista versus Rav Nachman. Rav Chista says that you would make a bracha on asiyat tzitzit. And Rav Nachman who says you do not make a bracha on asiyat tzitzit. They argue about this principle. Mar savar chuvat talitu. Rav Chista believes that it is Chuvat Amana, Chuvat Atalit. Putting tzitzit on the beged is not about wearing it. It's any beged, four-cornered beged that you would wear, or you will wear, or have worn, that requires tzitzit even when it's in your drawer, even when it is in your closet. That means when you put the tzitzit on, you've immediately accomplished the mitzvah. Because the asiyah and the accomplishment of the mitzvah are simultaneous. Because the obligation to put tzitzit on, even when you're not wearing them. On the other hand, Marsavar Chuvat Gavru. On the other hand, Rav Nachman believes that it's an obligation on the gavra, on the individual. That means that when you make the tzitzit, you still haven't done the mitzvah. The mitzvah is only done when you put on the tzitzit, you wear the tzitzit. Since the chukah gavra, there's a gap between the asiyat mitzvah and the accomplishment of the mitzvah. And so based on the principle we just established, something where the asiyat and accomplishment of the mitzvah are simultaneous. You make a bracha. According to Rav Chista, that's what's happening here. So as you put the tzitzit on, you're yotzei the mitzvah, because it's chovet talit, it's chovet amama. So therefore, you're yotzei the mitzvah, you make a bracha on asiyah. On the other hand, Rav Nachman believes that it's chovet gavra, believes that there's a delay between the asiyah, creating the mitzvah, facilitating the mitzvah, and the actual doing of the mitzvah. Therefore, you can't make a bracha on the asiyah. That's the way Rashi explains this. Or you could say that it's the machlok between Rav Adar Bava and Rav Nachman as to whether you do make a bracha or don't make a bracha on the asiyat tzitzit. And that's governed by this machloket as to whether it's chovat mana or chovat gavra. Again, that will depend on how you view what happened to Rav Chista over here. In the end, is this an emendation of what Rav Chista's view is? And this is still the view of Rav Chista, but this is the way to look at it. Or is this simply a complete rejection of Rav Chista? And now we're just trying to explain what's the difference in opinions as to whether you have to make a bracha on the siyata tzitzit or not make a bracha on the siyata tzitzit. So it turned out to be interesting only because Rav Nachman's a Talmid of Shmuel, and Rav Nachman's then agreeing with Rav's position that you don't make a bracha on the siyata tzitzit, despite the fact that his Rebbe Shmuel actually thinks that it's chuvat amana. But he's holding that it's chuvat agavra, and therefore there's no need for it's bracha on the siyata tzitzit. Right now, the Gemara continues and says, Amalei Rav Mordechai Rav Ashi, Atun Hachi Matnit Allah. That's how you guys learn it. Anan Hachi Matnit Allah. This is the way we learn that pasuk. That we have the following Mesorah. Amrav Yudah Merav, Minan Tzitzit Boveid Kochavim Shekesh Sheira. How do you know that tzitzit can be made by a non-Jew? Shenemar, and then if it can be made by a non-Jew, there's no need for a bracha on the tzitzit, and then it won't be a stira. Then you don't have any stira over here, because the whole Rav Chista's whole stira derives from the fact that Rav says that you can't have an Obey Kochavim make it, which would imply you do make a bracha on the Asiyah, and you have the other version of Rav that says no bracha on the Asiyah. But now, if you learn it this way, which is that Amar Rav Yudah Merav, that the member was that Minayin Tzitzit B'Vachidim Sheira, that you're allowed to make Tzitzit by an Obey Kochavim, Shinei Amar Darbero B'nei Yisrael, Vasulehem Tzitzit, tell B'nei Yisrael that they will make Tzitzit, Yasulehem Achirim, others will make tzitzit on their behalf. Tell B'nai Yisrael, others will make their tzitzit for them. Basulam tzitzit, they will make it for them. They even referring to outsiders, third parties, Obey Kochavim. So that would imply that Obey Kochavim can make tzitzit. If that's the case, then there's no stira in Rav anymore, and the whole question of Rav Chista falls away. Amar Rav Yudah Merav, Asan Mina Kotzin, if you made them from, as Rashi says, the Mina Kotzin are the threads that are hanging on the ends, they are fringes, mina nimin, if you make it from the threads, mina gardin, from the tufts, psula, all of those are psulin, mina sisin, if you make them from a ball of wool or shera, that is fine. So what is being said here according to Rashi is, you have certain strings that are already attached to the beged. You have these fringes at the end that hang off the end, these strings that hang off the end. You have threads that are hanging off, meaning that when you come and stitch something on the beged, and then you have the end of that thread that just hangs off where you stitch, that's also string that's hanging off. Gardein means you have tufts that are at the edge of the beged, or tufts that are hanging there on the beged. All of those are excess strings of the beged. All of those are psulin. They are problematic, as Rashi says, kozman shemichubarim the beged. They are attached to the beged, the beinan asiya lishma. Because they have to be done lishma. Tosfot over here quotes the fact that Rashi says, "Shum taseh v'lo min asui." That the problem here is it has to be done an asiyah and not min asui, something that's already made. From what we saw in Rashi, that's not what he says over here. He says, "Bein esun lishma," and that's exactly what Tosfot says over here. Tosfot says the problem is that you need asiyah lishma. We saw this machok between Rashi and Tosfot earlier. Rashi keeps claiming that many of these items here are taseh v'lo min asui. They're already made, and you're not making them the shame, the tzitzit, so then it's taseh v'lo min asui. Tosfot says it's a fundamental problem. You're not making them the shame tzitzit. That's the problem here. It has nothing to do with taseh v'lo min asui. They're done already, and you don't have to make them. They're just not done lishma. That's the big problem over here, and there's no asiyah lishma. So the problem is, if you're just taking these strings that are hanging off the beged, either it's taseh v'lo min asui, according to Rashi, the way Tosfot reads him, or it's a problem of lishma, the way we have it in our Rashi and Tosfot, is that you didn't do them the same mitzvah tzitzit. So there are strings hanging from the beged, but that doesn't make them into tzitzit, or you can't co-opt them into being tzitzit now, because they were never made for the purpose of tzitzit. On the other hand, the sisim are kshira, which means that if you have a ball of wool that's just sitting there, you can take those strings and then make them into tzitzit. Gamrita gamrita Shmuel, when Rabbi Yehuda, who learned by Rav and then by Shmuel after Rav passed away, gamrita gamrita Shmuel amar apine sisim psula. Rabbi Yehuda says, when I told this over to Shmuel, he says, even the sisim are psula. Beinan tviya lishma. You need to twine, to spin the thread, lishma. That there's a requirement, not only that the tzitzit be made lishma, but the strings for the tzitzit need to be tviya lishma, which is the spinning of the string must also be done lishma. The question of the twining of the string, which is shizurim, is subject to a machloged rishonim, which we discussed earlier with regards to petil techelet. How do you understand the word petil? Does petil mean the one that you wrap around the other strings? That's the view of the Rambam. Therefore, the Rambam does not have an obligation of actually twining the strings, lishma. Others believe that the word petil means exactly that they are twisted or twined, lishma, And therefore, there's also a requirement not only of tfiyah, being spun lishma, there's also a requirement of shizurim lishma, because the word petil teaches you that. And that's the shita, if you can see by the Ravid, who disagrees with the Rambam, that there is a requirement of shizura bilishma. Although the Rambam has a totally different view here, and he says that the nimim are strings of semer that they collect after the sheep pass through the thorns. The gardim are things that the weavers cut off, the excess strings or fluff that's there that they cut off, those extra strings. And the reason they're pasul over here is just because they're not ra'oy, they're not proper type of wool that is to be used by the beged. It's not a halachic problem, but rather a practical or noy problem, which is that they're not material that is proper to be used for a beged. And it says, kitanae, this is actually a machloket tanaim. Tzipanzav, oshet talalem, or beimat mea, psulot. So Rashi says it's a reference to tefillin, and you made the tefillin out of gold, or you made the tefillin out of a non-kosher hide. Psulot, they're no good. Or beimat teora, it's made out of a hide of a kosher animal, doesn't have to be kosher, the animal, but it has to be from a kosher animal. Ksherot, v'apo pishlo ibdam lishman, even though you did not tan them or make the hides lishma, as long as it comes from a kosher animal, you can use them for tefillin. Rabban Shimon b'Gamliel omer, af or beima tehora psulot. Even that kosher animal's hides are psulot, ad shi abdam lishman. Until the ibud, until the tanning is done, lishma. So that's exactly the machlokas we have here. Just like by tzitzit, Rav and Shmuel are arguing about whether you need to have the spinning and the twining of the threads be done lishma. So to over here, we have a machloket as to whether the hides of the tefillin have to be made lishma. And the Tanakhama says they don't, and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says they do. And even though here we have generally a print loch ke rab yisurei, when it comes to yisurim, the halacha is like Rab, nevertheless over here, the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel over here, and you need the tzitzit and the tefillin to be made lishma. And that means not only the actual forging or making of the tzitzit, the tying of the tzitzit, or the making of the tefillin, it means that the raw materials used for the making of the tzitzit and the raw materials used for the tefillin also have to be done lishma. So therefore, this also seems to be correlated with the same mitzvot that require taseh velo min asui. Those mitzvot that require asiyah also require an asiyah lishma, because the fact that there's a demand for a type of asiyah also means there's a demand for lishma in the asiyah. Tefillin, mezuzah, tzitzit, sukkah, which there's a day on the Gemara that sukkah has to be done lishma, but obviously sukkah could present a problem. But these are all mitzvot where there's a requirement of taseh velo min asui, it's a requirement of lishma, and there's possibly a requirement of brocha on the asiyah. And that's because there's a big focus or emphasis on the asiyah in these mitzvot, likely because of what the Netziv says, that this is an asiyah haktuvah b'torah. It's a hekshar mitzvah haktuvah b'torah. It's an asiyah that's mentioned in the Torah, the demand for making them, not just the performance of the mitzvah, but the making of the mitzvah is also mentioned in the Torah. Avar lei abayi de Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yehuda, ha'tzechilta heicha tzavitula. Abayi says to Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, how do you guys dye the tchilet? How do you guys make the tchilet? Amar lei matinan dam mechilazon vismanim. We bring the blood of the chilazon and other chemicals or materials that we add in, and we throw them into the cauldron, and then we heat them up. Now, it's strange that there are other materials that are put in here besides the blood of the chilazon. So Rashi over here says that the purpose of the smanim are not for the coloring or the dyeing of the tchelet, but rather they are the facilitator of the dye taking to the wool. So that's what he says. Derech hatzovim lishrot begadim bitzrif shkoyim baitza. They put it into this alum mixture that Rashi says, and that mixture helps the dye to take hold on the wool. So the smanim are not about creating the color or the dye itself, but rather it helps the dye to take to the wool. The Baal Tosafot clearly disagree with that and say, smananim, davartemu ech mariv shum davar ba'di tchelet. How do you mix anything with the tchelet? Then it's not tchelet anymore. It's tchelet with something else. The shema im smananim nikra tchelet. It says maybe the blood of the chilazon with these other chemicals, that's called tchelet. The tchelet is not the blood of the chilazon, but rather the blood of the chilazon together with these other items. That's what's called tchelet. That's how Baal Tosafot deal with the injury. So Kochus Peres l'shlot b'hem v'derech hatzuvim shushrim atom b'tzrif. So he says, Rashi says that the chemicals are just facilitators of the tchilit taking to the wool, but not that they are part of the tchilit itself. Tchilit is the dam achilazon, and that's the color, and that's the dye. They have a machloket Rashi and Tosafot as to what the purpose of this manim are over here, whether that's to create the tchilit or the dye that you want, or this manim here to facilitate the dye taking hold on the wool. So it says, v'shakilna purta v'beata. Then we take an eggshell, which is like a little utensil, and we take out a sampler from there. V'tamina lo b'udra. And then we do a tester, a sampler with wool, dip it in to see if the tchilit is ready. V'shadina le lahau b'beata. Then we toss out that egg with the dye in it. We get rid of it. And v'kalina lo l'udra. And then we burn the wool that we did with the sampling. My says, Shmamina Tzlat. From this you learn three things. Shmamina Tzima Psula. First of all, you see from this that when you make a sampler, that wool that's made with the sample is not kosher l'tzitzit, because it wasn't made lishma for tzitzit. That sample itself, the sampling that you're using is no good. Shmamina Dvin and Tzviya lishma. Number two is that the Tzviya has to be done with the intent of Tzviya. Lishma, the dying l'shem tzitzit. And it wasn't done l'shem a sampling. Shmamina. Now here, the question about the girsa, but let's assume it is tama pasla. That according to Rashi, if you dump the sampler back into the yoreh, that will ruin the entire yoreh. Because now you have sampler inside of the yoreh, and that will cause a problem for you, and that's why you have to toss away the egg with the sample in it, the liquid dye in it, because if you put it back into the yoreh, into the cauldron, it'll ruin the whole cauldron. Others say that tama pasla means you can't do this sampling in the yoreh. You can't do it inside of the cauldron itself. You have to take it out. That's why you need the biota to take it out. So those are the three conclusions. On Rav Ashi, the Gemara says, "Hainu tima psula, hainu tzviya lishma." Right? You just said before that if you do a sampler, it's pasul, and that means that you have to do tzviya lishma. You have to do the dying lishma. The Gemara says it's the same thing. The reason that the sampler that you make of the wool is no good is because it wasn't made lishma. So then, how can you tell me that a sampler is pasul and that you have to do a lishma? There are two sides of the same coin. The reason the sampler is pasul is because you need to do lishma. So Rav Ashi, matam kamar. It's giving you the reason. Matam ti mapsula. Why is a sampler pasul? Mishum divina tzviya lishma. Because you have to do the tzviya, you have to do the dying lishma. So they're right, integrally connected. The requirement for lishma eliminates the possibility of having a sampler or a floor model being kosher because you just did it for a sample. And that explains the behavior of Shmuel by Rabbi Yehuda, that after they did the sampling, they tossed the egg away with the sample liquid in it, and they used to burn the wool that they made so nobody makes any mistakes. None of this gets added back into the cauldron, and none of this wool gets used because it wasn't done lishma. Ki tanae, that is like similar to a machloket tanaim. Tima psula, a sampler is pasul, mishum shnemar, kliel techelet. And it sounds from here that it's got to be fully tchelet, as Rashi says over here. Kol tchelet she kol ikar marei achilazon betzemer. The entire blood or dying of the achilazon is been sever. Shlo yedaver achet savu abam mitchilata. You can't have anything else dyed in it first. So the problem with the sampler dye is that you already dyed something in it. And now that you dyed something in it, if you go to dye something else in it, it's not going to get the full power of the dye of the achilazon because that color was already taken off by another item. So from Rashi, it would sound like that you could only do one dyeing per cauldron. Once you put the cauldron in and you dye it, then you can't do others. And Tosfot is bothered by that. It says that's definitely not what is being said over here. And it says, Lekech tzerek lomar, tafilu mea paramim lishmo, that even if you do 100 dyeings, l'shem tchelet, that is kosher. Da klil tchelet karinimbe. That's still called klil tchelet. You create a dye that is not good for tchelet. That's why it's called a second level dye. So Tosafot disagrees with Rashi's view that you can only dye once, you can't dye twice. But rather, he says that as long as you're dyeing lishma, that's called kliel tchelet. That's called all along, it's called completely tchelet because everything you're doing along the way is useful for tchelet, can be used for tzitzit. As soon as you do a sampler in there, you have a problem because the sampler then makes that you use the dye shalom klil tchilet. It wasn't used for tchilet, and that's what ruins the dye. That's why the sampler is problematic, because it wasn't done lishmo. And since it wasn't done lishmo, then you can't do a second dyeing afterwards because it's no longer klil tchilet. Solely and only used for tchilet. That's when it's okay. But to be used for any other purpose, including sampling, which is lo lishma, that can't be then added in or can't be used anymore for making a tzitzit. So Tosafot says it's a halachic hagdara. You have to do kliut tzvei, that has to be used totally and entirely for the mitzvah of making tzitzit techelet. Otherwise, you can't use it again. As Rashi says, it's a practical chemical problem, which is, once you've used it once, you've now reduced the dyeing capacity of this yoreh, and that's why you can't use the sampler again, but that would imply that even the regular yoreh, you can't use it twice. You can only dye once, not dye twice from that cauldron. Rabbi Yochanan ben Da'avai Omer, Afilu Marash Sheni Sheba Kasher. Even a second level dye is okay. That's what Rashi reads. It tells what it means. Even if you have done a sampler in it first, not kliul techelet, it's still okay. Shem shenemar ushni tolat, because it says over there shni tolat, and he's not reading it as shni tolat or shani tolat, but rather as sheni tolat. Even if it's the second one. Now, interesting enough, you can see here in the Torah Or that he quotes this from Meirik Yudalit. That's why the case of mitzora, tarata mitzora. And that is the Shni Tolat is a string that is used as part of the items that you need for Tarat HaMetzorah, the Ezov, the Eitz Erez, and the Shni Tolat. That's what they're quoting over here, the Shni Tolat. The problem is that Tchelet is not found anywhere in that Pasuk. Where we find Tchelet is by the Big Day Kunan, the materials for the Mishkan. Over there we find many times the words Shani and Tchelet found in the same Pasuk, and as Rashi says, since they're found in the same Pasuk, it reflects on the Tchelet. Problem is that the quote here is Shani Tolat, which is from Mitzora, where there is no Tchelet in the Pasuk. And what we're looking for is Tolat Shani. Tolat Shani is mentioned numerous times in the building of the Mishkan and the Big Day Kuhuna. And over there, the word Tchelet is in the Pasuk together. So either you have to say that the quote should be Tolat Shani and not Shani Tolat, or you have to say that the Shani Tolat they're bringing in particular, because that's where you can say Shani Tolat, that the second one is still good. And that drush only applies when the Shani is before the Tolat, not the other way around. And then we're going to say, once we know that about the Shani Tolat, we'll down take that and apply it to the Tolat Shani, which is the same thing, just the opposite way around. But that means that the quote either has to be from Parsa Truma or Tzitzaveh, Vayakel Pekudei, where we find these materials in the same Pasuk, or it's learned out of Mitzora, but then applied to those Pesukim over there. And again, from Rashi, it sounds like we're speaking about the Tolat Shani that is found in the same Pasuk as the Tchelet. Tarabanan, Tchelet ain la bikidika. You can't check Tchelet. You can't know whether something's made from Tchelet or it's made from Kalailan indigo. They have the same chemical properties, even though one's coming from a plant and one is coming from an animal. That seems to be a pol yotze. Then you can only buy it from an expert or someone who is trustworthy with regards to this and knows what they're doing, because since you can't check after the fact whether it's tchelet or kalailan, you need the guy up front to be honest and know what he's doing up front so that it's tchelet. Tfilin yesh lehem bedika. Tfilin can be checked. Ve'nikachim ele mimche. Still, they can only be bought from an expert. Rashi over here suggests that with regards to tfilin, you can check the chaserot v'yeterot. You can see how he wrote the parshiot tfilin. If he got all the chaserot and yeterot right, if he got the making of the forming of the letters correctly, it's visible what he needs to do. So you can check it. But nevertheless, you have to buy it from a mumche, because Rashi says over here, you need ibud lishma. They have to be tanned, or the skins, hides have to be made lishame, the tefillin. And that's something you can't check after the fact. There's no way to know if they're lishma or no lishma. You need someone who's trustworthy. That's why it has to be bought from a mumche. Sfarim umuzmot, yesh lehem bedika. Sfarim mizuzot can be checked. V'nikachim mikol adam, and they can be bought from anyone. So according to Rashi, that's because you don't need ibud lishma. By mizuzot and sefer Torah, you don't need the hides to be made lishma for those items. So that's the way Rashi learns it. The Bai Tosafot do not agree, because they say we find in other places in Shas that the Torah does need ibud lishma. And so the difference here can't be about ibud, whether it's lishma or lo lishma. He says that they do require lishma. Tefillin, mizuzot, and Torah all require lishma, but Stam Adam is believed about that. Everybody who works with these types of items knows they need to be made lishma, and if they're working with them, they definitely did in lishma. That's not our fear over here. But rather, the question of bedika is a question of nuisance, which is that by tefillin, they can be checked, but in order to check them, you have to open up the tefillin, you have to undo the tefillin and open them up. That's a serious undertaking. So even though you can check the parshiot, nevertheless, to do that is a big undertaking. Therefore, we say buy it from an expert so that you don't have to go back and do this bedikah, because you're not going to do it. Either you're not going to do it because it's too cumbersome, or you're going to have to do a lot of work to do the bedika that you need. On the other hand, by mezuzah and Sefer Torah, those are items that can be easily taken down the mezuzah or Sefer Torah opened up, and you can do the checking easily. So there we say you can check it. That's why you can buy it from anyone and just check it. You'll see what's inside. Tosfot then ends off at the end. He quotes from the Shimush Rabba that says that by tefillin, one should check them twice in 7 years. And he says the reason that you're checking them is not because of the parshiot themselves. That's not to check whether the parshiot were written correctly. If that was the case, you should have done it up front. You don't do it at some later time. But the means that we assume that parshiot are written correctly. Elashema balu v'nitz kalkalu. Our fear is that they wore down. Moisture got in them. They dried out. They cracked. Things happened to the parchments inside. And that's why you have to check the tefillin. Umezuzah shkachan bedika. And also by mezuzah we have a bedika. Again, twice every 7 years. He says, but the checking of the mezuzah might be different than the checking of the tefillin. So then the Gemara continues, there's no way to check tefillin. Don't we have the Gemara in Nidah and other places which gives us a chemical process by which you can check whether the tefillin is really tefillin. The main thing that they're looking for is the fact that tefillin is the strongest hold on the wool. It's the best dye in terms of its hold on the wool, as opposed to indigo, which has similar chemical properties, but does not hold on the wool as well. So if you're able to wash it in some very caustic agent, then you'll get a sense as to whether this is tchelet or not. If it's tchelet, it will not either reduce the color, or it will not cause the tchelet to bleed off of the wool. If it is kalilan or any other material, the caustic agent will cause it either to reduce its color, or to bleed off of the wool. And so there are ways to test it, which is, Fabri Yitzhak Breda Rav Yehuda Bodiklei, he used to check it, Maite Magvia Gila, Paisa, Rashi says, V'lishon Sarfat Alom, he used to bring Alom, Umaya de Shablalita, and water that comes out of fenugreek, Umeme Raglayim, and urine, Ben Arbaim Yom, that is 40 days old, Rashi brings two interpretations, either urine from a 40-day-old baby, or urine that is left to ferment for 40 days, b'tarila b'gabayu, then he puts them in b'orta at night, b'ad l'tzafra all the way till the morning, puts them in there for like 12 hours overnight, ifrid chazute psula, if its color fades, then it is psula, lo ifrid chazute, if the color does not fade, kshera. So here you've got what is otherwise a caustic agent, you have urine that is fermented, you have the water from the fenugreek and the salum, all of which are these types of caustic agents that will eat away at the coloring. And if the dye is able to survive that, that shows it's tchelet. If the dye does not survive that, that is kaleilan. Rav Avda kamei de rova mishmei de rav avira amar. This is the chemical process by which you can test it. Maite chamira irkasa desare. He brings a yeast, but it's a yeast that's created by a fermented bread, a sour dough
from barley.
And then you bake the tchelet or the string inside of this sourdough. Ishtanai lemalyuta. If the color becomes clearer or better, kshera. Ligriuta. If it ruins the color or somehow diminishes the color, psula. The simanech. And the siman to remember is shunui sheker. If the shunui is a deficit, then it's a liar. It's a sheker. Shinoi, if it's an improvement, the shinoi is a change for the better, emet, then it is certainly tchelet. Again here, you're using something, again, that's a caustic agent. Sour dough, which has the ability to ferment other doughs, so it has that chemical process that is caustic in nature that can now test whether the color is really holding. Ma'ayin labadikas, nami de kamar. So what does it mean that you can't check tchelet? Atima. There's no way to check whether it's a sample or not a sample. The lack of check is not that you can't check whether it's tchelet or kaleilan, which is what we assumed originally. There's no way to check whether it's really tchelet or not. That we can check whether it's really tchelet. Our problem is, we don't know the person who's making it, but did he make it from a fresh batch of tchelet? Or did he make it out of a sampler batch? If that sampler used it as a sample or dumped the sample back, that's not kasher. And there's no way after the fact to know whether it was a sampler or to know whether it was real tzitzit. So that's why you have to buy it from somebody who's trustworthy, because they have to be able to tell you that it's really done lishma, and it wasn't done l'shem, a sampling, and so that you know that the tchelet and the tzitzit were made properly. Okay, we're going to stop here. 8 lines down on the top of Mem Gimel Amud Aleph.